Redline.
Iran and six world powers made last-ditch efforts to strike a historic deal on Tehran's controversial nuclear program, which would hopefully resolve one of the major security crises of today. The negotiations between six leading powers and Tehran aimed at reaching a compromise can be written into the textbooks of international diplomacy as an example of mastering the hard-taught art of compromise and consensus. Meantime, opponents of the deal are desperate for finding last-minute efforts to launch propaganda counteroffensive, which is aimed at putting brakes on the deal. And this is what we are going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines, where we are analyzing thought-provoking stories of the week. The arguments of skeptics are summarized in an article, Nine Red Lines for a Nuclear Agreement with Iran, carried by Jerusalem Post and written by Frank Gaffney and Fred Flates. Here is what authors say. But what would a good deal with Iran look like? To answer this question, the Center for Security Policy, in conjunction with many experts, came up with the following nine red lines, which we have nicknamed the National Security Nine, for an acceptable nuclear agreement with Iran. End quote. And according to the story, these red lines are no uranium enrichment, no plutonium producing reactors, robust verification, lift sanctions in stages in response to Iran compliance, and other. I'm not in a position to just recall the whole red line, so if someone wants to read, he may go and read the story. So, but here in the red line we are discussing today, red lines, if any. And let me start with our first studio guest, member of Russian Council for International Relations and former Russia's ambassador to Myanmar, Gleb Ivashintsev. Mr. Ivashintsev, so you see, the deal has not yet been stricken by Friday, but the skeptics already are talking about red lines. And it seems that this looks like a sort of an attempt to put a brake on the deal. Why they're so unhappy?
No, because some people always want to dictate their rules to the game. We understand that those red lines which were produced in Jerusalem Post, they represent the position of the government of Israel.
Yeah, but you are a seasoned diplomat. Are they credible? Tell me.
No, they are not credible.
Then explain why.
There should be a real understanding of the political development.
So you mean it's taken out of context?
Of course. Because, you see, Iran is a major power in the region.
Yeah.
And one should respect the role of that major power. Iran should not be pushed into a corner, and it cannot be pushed into a corner. And in that position, even United States, which still do not have diplomatic relations with Iran, and for decades have been pursuing anti-Iranian, purely anti-Iranian line in international affairs, they have agreed to that deal, because it is a must in the present situation. And it shows that even Washington sometimes is ready to be realistic. And, of course, all those recommendations by Israel, they're completely out of place in the situation.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. You mentioned this question of realism. Probably this is a key word, you see, because those who are opposing the deal, they are lacking that realism. In fact, today we have another studio guest, Vladimir Sotnikov, director of East-West Strategic Studies Center, Moscow-based think tank, Mr. Sotnikov. So you heard what Mr. Ivashintsev said,
I heard.
That realism and those stereotypes and attempts to corner Iran. So let us be frank. It looks like the negotiations in Vienna reached the point of non-return, so no one doubts that the deal is reached, you see. So how would it change the world, actually?
Well, actually, first of all, I would like to share my complete agreement with what Mr. Ivashintsev said, because no one can or should corner Iran. And I read this story, by the way, in the Jerusalem Post, and my opinion is that if the United States would be following these principles, nine principles, there would be no any deal at all.
No deal at all.
So, and then just answering your question straight away, I think that, first of all, for the global regime of non-proliferation, it's a good thing, it's a good point, because for the first time, this such an important country like Iran voluntarily take responsibility upon itself not to, if they were suspected of that, no any proofs, as Russia was always telling, no any proofs that Iran was actually developing a nuclear military nuclear capability. But anyhow, such an important country is taking full responsibility not to toy with a nuclear weapon, actually.
I agree with you, but the devil is in details, and this week, obviously, all eyes were focused on Vienna talks, and now we have a voice from Vienna, so we are privileged to have in our program our guest from Austria, Thomas Seifert, editor-in-chief of Vienna Zeitung paper.
Red line.
Thomas, do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
So probably you started to listen to our discussion in the studio. So your advantage is that you are closer to the place, so you've seen that chemistry of diplomacy. And it turned out that Vienna proved to be just a place where we are witnessing the coming up of, well, a compromise, a difficult compromise, but it seems that they would come up with a positive result. So tell us, please, about the atmosphere of the talks.
Yeah, I think our colleague just got it right when he said the point of no return has been crossed. I also absolutely believe that that's the case. But also Vienna tends to be the place with the beautiful weather we used to have, maybe especially, that people don't want to leave. We should not forget that. I think especially that's the case with John Kerry, the Secretary of State of the United States, and also his counterpart, Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif, that I think they have been in town, it seems like forever, so they seem to like the place so much that they don't want to leave. No, but I think I should strike a more serious note here. We are, I think, heading towards the end of these discussions, and as we all know, when we have difficult discussions in diplomacy, at the end usually you have some stuff that you just leave for the end because you cannot reach an agreement. But it seems to be that all these problems that are still there with the stockpiles and also the weapons embargo and all these difficult questions, I think, can be solved. And when you are asking about the atmosphere, I think one thing that has been achieved, and everybody I think here who observed this is pretty sure about that there has been a level of trust between especially the United States and Iran that we have not seen for ages. And I think that we all know that trust is of the essence, and that has been achieved. And just one more thing that what is also, I think, interesting is we just remembered the end of the Vienna Congress that happened 200 years ago in this town, which was, of course, a very important conference after the French Revolution and Napoleonic Wars. And this time we have get an Iran deal. So also, of course, makes people, I think, in the diplomatic community in Vienna proud that Vienna will be a place where such an agreement can be hammered out and also signed.
Thomas, thank you very much for that comment. So now we're joined by Justin Dargin, Middle East geopolitical expert at the University of Oxford. Justin, thanks for coming on the program. This week we've seen a heated debate over Vienna talks while Iran and six world powers were inching to historic compromise but were not able to reach it till Friday. And what is also striking that opponents of the deal launched a sort of preemptive attack on it. What is the reason for that? While it seems that Big Six already agreed that the world needs this deal, why opponents just want to put brakes on it?
Absolutely. Well, there are several reasons for that, Sergey. One of the main reasons that we have is that, as you know, the last 100 feet of a marathon are actually the toughest, and that's actually what we're experiencing here with these negotiations. So if you look at one factor, we have the fact that both sides, and let's say if we look at the side of the U.S. and then the side of Iran, for instance, they don't want to appear to be weak for certain hardline, let's say, opponents of the deal. So each side wants to posture that it has made its opponent, let's say, if we were to use that term, or perhaps the other stakeholders or negotiating partners, to back down and to concede significantly. So that's really one issue. So as we are approaching the end of the negotiations, then each side really wants to come back home to a hero's welcome and to say that we have achieved or acquired the best deal possible. That's one. And then another issue is that negotiations have become much more politicized. So with the relative technical issues of the negotiations more or less settled, what it is moving towards now is dealing with more grand, let's say, political issues on, let's say, Iran's reintroduction into the international community. So there are Iran is quite concerned about the UN arms embargo, for instance, and also certain key sanctions on its ballistic missiles program, in which Iran argues that it has absolutely nothing to do with its nuclear program and should not really be even applied against it. And they want those sanctions removed, of course, as part of any final agreement. And the Western powers are not willing to make that concession. And they say that, you know, and this is also related to Arab Spring issues and Iran's role, let's say, in Yemen and in Syria and so on and so forth. So the West more or less believes that Iran would, let's say, introduce more arms into an already volatile region, so they aren't willing to back away on that. And then on the side of the Western powers, even though there has been some concessions that have been made on this point, but they want a type of accounting of Iran's past activities and also interviews with the key figures in the Iranian scientific community that have worked on its nuclear program. And Iran says that this basically has nothing to do with a nuclear agreement or uranium enrichment agreement going forward. So it really has no bearing on the position right now. It has no bearing on where we're at in our negotiations and so on and so forth. And therefore, it should not be on the table. And Iran also thinks that what the Western powers are attempting to do with that is to try to get a peek into Iran's broader military, let's say, modernization programs and so on and so forth outside of its uranium enrichment. So Iran thinks that it would introduce certain intelligence agencies into the country to be able to spy on its other military activities outside of uranium enrichment. So, I mean, so those are pretty much the key obstacles that, you know, as we enter into the 11th hour, which has been, you know, holding up, the parties, negotiating parties.
Red line.
And now we are getting back to the details of the shaping up deal. Again, to an expert in nuclear proliferation, Rajeshwari Rajagopalan, senior fellow with Observer Research Foundation from New Delhi and editor of Nuclear Deal, Implications of Framework Agreement. Dr. Rajeshwari, do you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. I can hear you. Thank you very much.
So probably you were also listening to our discussion. So now the opponents of the deal are split in hairs, just trying to say that this is a bad deal, that the world would be much less secure, contrary to what Big Six say. Where are you in this dispute?
I agree. I wish I was as optimistic as the last speaker on your program, who was kind of optimistic that IBNA would go down the history as witnessing yet another major diplomatic victory, in a sense. I hope we do that, but I'm beginning to get skeptical on a variety of issues, because I think the West in general and the U.S. in particular had made a lot of concessions already to Iran in the joint plan of action agreement that was reached on April 2nd, did see a lot of changes, in a sense. So what you're beginning to see today is that Iran is making new demands. Arms embargo, for instance, this was nowhere on the picture, nowhere on the agreement that was decided that they would discuss this particular issue. But arms embargo, lifting of the arms embargo has been clearly brought in by the Iranians at this point of time. Well, and there is still no agreement on a lot of other issues. Past nuclear research activities. Past activities are nowhere to be the West is essentially giving up on that. The enrichment period time, the phasing of the sanctions, phased pattern of the sanctions, all of that, we are seeing that the West is walking back or giving concessions. And I think the Iranians are actually, at this point of time, they got a fantastic deal. But even then, I think they are trying to push and see how far they can get more. Are they going to get more concessions out of? So clearly the arms embargo is something that the Iranians are trying to see if they can get a deal out of Washington on this particular time.
So let me thank all our guests for this insightful and lively debate. So to start with, Gleb Vashensov, member of Russia's Council for International Relations and former Russia's ambassador to Myanmar and South Korea, Vladimir Sotnikov, director of East-West Strategic Studies Center, Moscow-based independent think tank, Thomas Seifert, editor-in-chief of Vienna Zeitung paper from Vienna, Justin Dargin, Middle East geopolitical expert at the University of Oxford, and finally, Dr. Rajeshwari Rajagopalan, Senior Fellow with Observer Research Foundation and editor, Nuclear Deal, Implications of Framework Agreement. Following our program, we have Alexis Tsipras, Greek Colossus, Battling European Dwarves. Stay with us.